Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Good Thursday, everyone. DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg with you, 98.7 ESPN. We'll probably wake up to the same song tomorrow and Monday and next week and weeks after that, but why are you laughing, Rick?
Because it couldn't be more true, Dave. I mean, it really is. It really absolutely is. I'm sitting here in the same sweatpants.
It's unbelievable.
I want to apologize, too. Bad on me. It slipped my mind. I meant to do it, and then we got stuck in the conversation and everything else. Happy Passover, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I apologize.
Thank you. And we had I guess as nice a Seder. I'll tell you, Zoom is some kind of company, huh? We had a nice Seder at our house. Sherry, surprisingly did all the cooking. And we got through it and we did the prayers and everything and the boys were, somewhat well behaved. So it was nice. And you guys got Easter coming up on Sunday. So, you know, time moves on. Even if you can't be with the ones that you love, you can Skype them in or Zoom them in or talk to them on the phone. Good morning, Chris Canty. How you doing, bud?
I'm good, Dave. I'm good. I'm just listening to you guys go back and forth about Holy Week and everything that's going on. It's just one of those times during the year that we're reminded that we can't be with all of our loved ones, with all of our family. And it's just a reflection of where we're at right now in this country and in the world with this pandemic. And I got to tell you guys, this thing is – it's really, really scary. And the one thing that we do every single show – and for some reason, I don't feel like we can ever do it enough, is try to shout out the people that are on the front lines of this thing, the medical professionals, the people that are in the kitchens, that are, you know, delivering our food, people in grocery stores, all of those individuals. We can't thank those people enough for what they're doing, putting themselves in harm's way in order to at least allow some semblance of our life to move forward.
Yeah, those are the heroes. There's no doubt about it. The doctors and the nurses and, I mean, the delivery truck drivers and the garbage men and, I mean, the list just goes on and on. The people working the grocery stores. It's amazing because I gotta be honest. I don't know that I would be brave enough to go and bear those kind of conditions. So to all those people, you know, we absolutely take our hats off.
You know, the one thing too, I think that is, I mean, if you want to try to pull positives out of this thing, you know, and having to go through, you know, yesterday going to the grocery store, multiple grocery stores and everything else, is just how lucky we really are. I mean, as bad as this is, I mean, when you sit back and you start to take for granted the things that we get to do on a daily basis that now we can't, that I miss and I'm sure you guys miss. But I mean, as a country, I mean, the ability to, you know, to go into a grocery store, the simplest things, like the littlest things that you take for granted on a daily basis. You know what I mean? Like the ability to jump in your car and go to the grocery store and have an entire grocery store full of food. And I think we take for granted that, the things like that seem like, you know, just regular everyday things. I think we take that stuff for granted. We're lucky. As a country, we're really, really lucky.
That's normal, right? Is when things are going fine, you don't really think about them. You just get up, do things, take them for granted, go to sleep and assume that it's going to be the same way tomorrow. And you know, a couple of weeks ago, it was not. It started to be every day was a different kind of day, and you're a shut away, and you can't socialize, and it is very different. And I mean, you're right. This is, and the sad thing about this now, Chris, is this is kind of becoming the new norm. Now it'll change, and we'll go back to seeing each other every day and having our conversations in person and being able to travel out to the island or Jersey or wherever and see everyone. But like, you wake up today and this is normal, right? You put on some sweatpants, you go downstairs in front of your setup, and you do a show, and then you hunker down with the family. You have very large meals, many of them, and then you go to sleep, and then you do it all over again. So this scary or amazingly has become, at least for the interim, our new normal.
This is our new normal, Dave. We've been at it for about a month or so, and from the early signs, it seems like social distancing is working, but the one thing that they keep saying on the news, the people that are in the know, is that we're going to be at this for a while. I mean, we're going to have to continue to do this for a while in order to get on the other side of this thing and to avoid any potential spikes, later on this summer or even when we come back in the fall. you know, Dr. Fauci said it a couple of nights ago, you know, in terms of getting back to normal, we might not ever get back to the way things were before the coronavirus, but we will get closer to that than where we're at right now. And so I think that that's something that everybody has to embrace. We all have to do our part. We have to show a little bit of awareness. We have to exercise some discipline in order to make sure that we save as many lives as we possibly can.
I was reading an article yesterday, Rick, and said the handshake is probably going to be extinct from this pandemic on. Like, you're not going to greet people with handshakes moving forward.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I mean, as much as I read and as much as I watch on TV and listen to, I understand like the mindset that things will be different. Even going to the grocery store yesterday, you know, seeing some of the people in there, I mean, no masks, no gloves, you know, just hanging out in the aisles. I don't know if that's necessary. I think some people will be different. I think some people will, you know, have, you know, as far as handshakes and, you know, washing your hands and everything else. I think there's a lot of people that will be different once this thing is, we're past this thing. But I think there'll be a lot of people that just go back to how they were before it started.
Well, there's a lot of people that won't change now. Right? I mean, you look down at some different states, and New York seems to be pretty much on the ball. But even so, you'll see shots of parks when it's a beautiful day and people are just out in droves and shoulder to shoulder. And the governor had to come out and say, can you guys please not play basketball? And they had to take down the rims at the park. So there's a lot of people. I mean, the majority of people are doing the right thing. But there's still a lot of people, and you'll see posts on social media. It drives me crazy. People that just they're living their lives. They do not believe this. They interviewed a woman the other day leaving church, and the member of the press said, why would you do this? How can you possibly do this? She's like, I don't believe it. I'm willing to sacrifice whatever it is to be able to go to church and to do these things. So for all the people that are doing the right thing, you do have the outlier that just they do whatever they want, and I don't think they fully believe what's going on right now.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. And I mean, you can go back to what happened with 9/11 and everything else, and how things changed, how, you know, the way you travel changed and everything else. And, you know, I'm guilty of this. I'm sure you guys are guilty of this too. I mean, all the things that were going to change as far as, you know, how you were screened going into flights and everything else. I mean, how many times have you sat in a security line for 40 minutes going, what the hell are we doing here? Why is this taking so long? Well, it's for your safety, but because it inconvenienced you and you sit there and wait in line, you're like, I mean, really, we got to do this? I mean, I think that's part of the reality of it.
Yeah, it's part of the reality of it, but I think people have to accept how serious this thing is. And Dave, for those that don't believe that this is actually a real issue, all they got to do is look at the funeral homes and watch the bodies pile up. You have funeral homes in New York City that can't accept any more bodies just because they're at capacity. They're mm-hmm. having trouble finding places to put people in the ground. Like, that's how serious this thing has gotten. New York is the epicenter for the coronavirus in the United States of America. So for people that aren't doing social distancing, for people that are continuing to gather in groups, for those that are continuing to go out to the parks, shame on you. Because you're right. Exacerbating a crisis that this country, that this city is dealing with.
You're right. And basically what those people are saying, and we're going to get to sports in a second, but we have time here. Basically what those people are saying is forget about themselves. Because odds are it's not going to affect them. If they're healthy enough to get up and go out to the parks and play basketball, odds are, not definitively, odds are it's not going to affect them. But odds are it's going to affect someone else. And they are basically saying, I don't care. I do not care how this affects you or your parents or your grandparents or anybody. All I care about is me. And, you know, you have a lot of great people. We'll get into it when we do observations. And I actually wrote down a couple of people that are just doing great, great things. But you have enough people that are not doing the right thing, which to me, it drives me crazy every time I see it, Rick. It drives me insane.
Well, of course it drives you insane. But, I mean, there's a lot of people, and, I mean, a vast majority that are concerned with their own personal interests. And if it's not affecting them or it's not affecting their family, then, you know, that's how they'll approach it. I mean, I think part of the problem, too, is that we all have, I mean, we have short memories. I mean, in the moment, yeah, you know, I'll be different. I'll remember. And then all of a sudden, you know, 6 months, a year later, I mean, that's in the past. I mean, you went through it, you dealt with it, and now you'll get back onto your regular lives.
But
I think in general, though, Dave, I mean, how many times, I mean, I use myself as an example. I sat and watched my grandfather die. He lived at my house with my parents, die of lung cancer. You would think that I, of all people, would be so anti- smoking, nicotine, like tobacco, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You think I could quit chewing tobacco? I can't. I haven't. I got two young kids. I've tried, but I end up back on it. Like, you'd think, having watched my grandfather go from 300 pounds to die at 100 and soaking wet, maybe 110 pounds, you know, watching episodes of Baywatch, because that used to make him happy, that the second I saw that happen, happy. I would, the second I saw that happen, I would quit. No, dummy's still doing it.
Yeah, you're right. And people do have short-term memories, except when it comes to sports. Like, if the Jets are in a situation where it's a tie game with 3 minutes to go, you'd probably be like, well, we never win this game. This never happens. But anything else in life, you just kind of let it go and you live your life moving forward.
Yeah, but time out. No, you're right. In the moment you're upset, and you're probably different because, losses hang with you. But then all of a sudden, like, you'll see what happens that season, and then season's over. You'll go through the offseason. You're all fired up because you got first round picks and all these different things. And then you forget what happened the previous season. You're like, you know what? This season's going to be different.
Yeah.
How many times have we done that as Mets and Knicks fans?
Well, what do they say? Like, the most optimistic day you're ever going to be for a team is opening day for 90% of the teams. Cause everyone has that same belief of, this is going to be our year. This is going to be the season. Why? Just cause it is.
Well, it's the same with an athlete. I mean, I'll never forget. I would sit and look around our locker with the Islanders and it would be the first day of training camp and Alan Hahn would come in and ask us questions at the time he's working for Newsday. You know, what are the expectations for the season? And, we're going to make the playoffs. I mean, he's like, you're going to make the playoffs. Have you looked around? No. I mean, I liked it. We got chemistry. It just feels like it's going to be a special year. And then by November, we're already eliminated from the playoffs. But that's the mindset you go into a season with.
Well, don't you have to?
Yeah. I mean, you do. Yeah, you do. I mean, I guess you'd want to be a little bit realistic, but that's no fun. I mean, that's the reason why you play, is to make playoffs to win a championship. You want to believe that. And
I'm pretty sure Andy Dalton with the Bengals didn't believe going into last year that they were capable of getting to the playoffs and winning the Super Bowl.
No, probably not, but at least you try to trick yourself. I mean, at least you want to pretend like all the stuff, all the work you're putting in is going to amount to something.
No, you're absolutely right. You're right. And I mean, I guess that's the beauty of sports, because it's so much optimism at the beginning of any season. Even when you're talking about the offseason with free agency and the draft, you're selling hope to a fan base. And that's why everybody's looking forward to the NFL draft in a couple of weeks, because it represents their team being able to get things turned around. So I guess that's the role that sports can play in our society and being that distraction. But Dave, we were talking about how many people are ignoring the ordinances and the orders to stay at home and shelter in place. I wonder what role could live sports play in terms of being able to keep people in their houses? Because that's one of the things that keeps people from being bored. The fact that we don't have any new content to watch on television, because all you're getting is the same old shows and the same old reports on the news. Maybe live sports can be a part of getting people to do the right thing.
Maybe. It's not going to hurt, that's for sure. And at a minimum, it's going to give people an outlet to watch the games and to enjoy games and to not physically socialize, but socialize on the phone and via Twitter and text and all those things. Like, sports is an amazing piece of life that brings us together. And go ahead, Chris. There's nothing like it. It's this unscripted, amazing thing that that's why people are so in love. And it's a multi-billion-dollar business all over the place.
Well, we talk about it all the time, right, Dave? When you see these television rights contracts go up and up and up, sports is really the last appointment television, right? Because everything else, all the other shows, I mean, you can DVR them, you can get them on demand, whatever you do. Well, with sports, people want to watch that as it's happening in real time. Nobody wants to come to the game after the fact, after everybody else knows how it plays out, after everybody else knows the score and how it ended.
No.
Like, you're going to sit down and watch a sporting event start to finish because you want to live in that moment. You want to see it as it happens in real time. And I think that's one of the things that we're missing, and I think that's why people in the federal government are prioritizing trying to find ways to get sports leagues back up on their feet.
Yeah, and it's an argument Sherry and I have had for years, Rick, years of can't you just DVR it? Can't you watch it? Like, no, I can't. Why? I don't know, but I can't. I'm not capable of taping a game and coming back and watching it after the fact when everyone knows the results. And no, I can't do that. I will not do that. I will not sacrifice it. I'm not going to your bar mitzvah. I'm not going to the wedding. I'm not going to the funeral. I'm not doing it because I'm selfish. I am not going to sacrifice watching a game for doing one of these things that everyone else does.
Yeah, I think the beauty of sports, too, I mean, it gives you something to root for, right? I mean, you said selling hope. I mean, it's you turn on a game and you have the hope that, you know, you're going to, by the time this game is over, you're going to be in a great mood because your team just won a game. And that's for me. I mean, that's the beauty of sports, one way or another. I mean, you're rooting for your team, you know, and you win, great. You're happy, you're in a great mood. You lose, well, we'll have tomorrow.
Which is probably a very bizarre and unhealthy way to live a life, by the way.
Probably a little bit. I mean, if it affects you, I mean, it affects you a little bit differently than it affects Chris and I. Like, I'm not going to move out of my house for a week.
No. But you get upset, and it will affect your mood, and it'll affect how you feel. Like, if the Mets, Edwin Diaz blows a 3-run lead, you wake up the next morning, you don't feel great.
No, I don't feel great, but it does give me a reprieve from, like, the real stuff I'm dealing with. Like, it's a game. If you're not playing in it and you haven't bet money on it, I mean, it's the win or lose. It's a trivial thing. Like, I could be upset about it, but it's not, I mean, nothing that I see. It's not life threatening. You know what I'm saying? Like, it gives me 3 hours where, yeah, I'll be upset or I'll be happy, but it's not, I mean, it's a release. It's a, you know, it takes me away from having to deal with, you know, everyday life.
It's a great distraction. I'll tell you that. It's a great distraction. You think that we're all as crazy when sports comes back? Like, you think I'm to the point where I can't sleep when the Giants lose, or do you think this time now puts everything more into perspective when we get sports back?
No, I think you'll be ratcheted up.
You think back to normal?
Yeah, you'll be. I mean, you'll be. We'll turn on the microphones, you know, the day after the first round of the draft, and if God forbid the Giants take someone you don't like with the fourth overall pick, or you find out that there was a deal to be had where Gettleman moves back a couple picks and gets more draft picks, and he doesn't do it. Oh yeah, I mean, we won't even be able to talk to you. You'll be a wreck.
Either way, it's going to make for a great show, right, Rick? If the Giants do something that Dave loves, he's going to be on this euphoric high. But if they do something like take another interior defensive lineman with the fourth overall pick, he's going to go crazy. Either way, it'll be entertaining.
There's no way. I mean, how in good conscience could they take the kid from Auburn? They can't. At
best
four,
player available, Dave.
But they can't at four.
Didn't we see the Jets do it? Didn't the Jets do it? Muhammad Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson, Leonard Williams, didn't the Jets do it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not looking
aren't we following the Jets blueprint?
I'm not looking at the Jets as the IBM of the NFL where you just want to follow exactly what they're doing.
Apparently that's what the Giants are doing.
Yeah, it seems like it. It seems like it. By the way, Jordan Renan will join us at 11:30 this morning. He's going to be dropping a new Breaking Big Blue episode, or he dropped one yesterday. So we can get into that with our beloved Jordan Renan. Buster Olney will join us tomorrow. So let's kind of tiptoe into the world of sports at 800-919-3776. We'll hear from LeBron James in a couple moments. He zoomed with the media yesterday and said it would kind of lack closure if we could not finish the season here. I don't know if Rick, it kind of feels like a strange take from LeBron.
Well, I think he's changed his tune a little bit. I think he's come to the realization that, you know, this may be as far as, I mean, he's in year 17, and the way his team is playing, how quickly they came together. Yeah, this is good. In the entirety of his Laker career, this may be as good an opportunity as he's going to have to win a championship. I mean, there's only so long he's going to be able to play at a high level. I'm not going to bet against him, but I mean, as far as, I mean, what he's done this season, I mean, he's been unbelievable. I mean, you're the best team in the NBA. Wouldn't you want to go? I mean, wouldn't you want to compete for a championship this year?
Of course you'd want to.
Absolutely. I think that's what it's all about, Rick. This is a self-serving take for LeBron James. I mean, you recognize how much work all the NBA players put in, but for LeBron James, he's staring at his career mortality, and he knows that he doesn't have that many more opportunities to compete for a championship, and whether he'll admit it or not, he's still chasing ghosts. Like this documentary that's going to drop in a little over a week from now, The Last Dance, documenting the late 90s Bulls. Like, it's all about trying to chase the greatness of Michael Jordan for LeBron James. In some people's eyes, he's eclipsed what Jordan has done, but in a lot of people's eyes, he'll never come that close. He'll never be Michael Jordan unless he closes the gap in terms of overall championships, and I think that that's what he's trying to do. And then, of course, justifying the decision to go to the Los Angeles Lakers and be looked at as one of those Lakers greats. When you look up in the Staples Center and you see all of those jerseys in the rafters, I mean, those guys are up there because they won championships. It'd be interesting to talk about LeBron James 4 years with the LA Lakers and him not winning a championship.
Yeah, I think the last thing you ever want to have as an athlete is regrets. And now, I mean, this is out of his control, obviously. But I mean, you know, what he's trying to accomplish, what he set out to accomplish. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, say what you want about Jordan, the six championships, six for six in the finals. I mean, if LeBron James can pull off winning championships for three different teams, I mean, as far as his legacy is concerned, that's pretty impressive, man, especially when you're the best player. I mean, the best player on those teams, on three different teams winning championships.
Yeah.
But also the other part.
Unbelievable achievement.
Also the other part of that, Rick, the fact that he did go to the Los Angeles Lakers, we know that he has business interests outside of basketball, but you also have to try to, you know, validate your decision in being able to compete at the highest level, and winning a championship would do that. I don't think anybody could say at any point in his career, I guess at the latter part when he went to the Wizards, but Michael Jordan prioritized winning throughout his entire career. It'd be interesting to see LeBron James, who's still kind of in his prime, make a decision where you're not prioritizing winning.
Yeah, plus, I mean, the way things have fallen into place for him this season, I mean, what he's been able to do individually and then what the supporting cast has been able to do. I mean, I thought the Lakers would be good. I didn't realize, I mean, they would run away with the number one seed in the Western Conference.
Yeah, they have the best record in the West, and they're pretty much uncatchable at this point. Even if they came back and finished the season, I don't think anybody could catch them at this point.
Which they're not. If they're going to come back, it's going to be playoffs.
They're only going to trip up against one of two teams, right? You're talking about the Clippers, and you're talking about the Bucks if they do come back and play this year.
Yes.
Those are the only two teams that could beat the Lakers in a series. Are we agreeing on that?
100%.
Yeah.
Look, is there a possibility the Rockets get them? I guess if they played that series 10 times, I think the Lakers win it 9+. I just think I don't trust the Rockets. I trust the Lakers much more. I trust LeBron. So, yes, for me, realistically, Clippers could get them. Absolutely. And I think might get them. And that's a team I would be most fearful of. Like, I love Milwaukee. They're great. I think they're going to wind up in the NBA Finals. But if I was either L.A. team, the other L.A. team would be the team that I was most concerned about, more so than Milwaukee.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I think the thing that would concern me about the Clippers is their depth and their position versatility. I mean, they've got a lot of guys that can guard a lot of different positions, and they can create some interesting ways to try to limit what LeBron James does on the offensive side of the court. So I think that to me would be the biggest concern if I'm Frank Vogel and if I'm the Los Angeles Lakers. I think that would be the team that you're probably circling and saying, if we do get back, that's our biggest hurdle to a championship. But if you're LeBron James, I mean, you take your chances. You're talking about possibly two teams at the most standing in your way of winning another championship.
Yep. Yeah. And I would like their chances against Milwaukee. So to me, you get by the Clippers, and I believe that you will win a championship. And think about the advantages you have here. Home court advantage, you'll have that. I mean, you could argue that you're going to have it in every game.
Well, there's not going to be home court advantage. I mean, there's not going to be home court advantage. You're not going to be playing in front of fans. So, I mean, you just throw that out the window. No one has home court advantage.
That's a valid point. No travel, right? Which probably won't happen anyway because they'll probably do everything from a central location. But, so you'll have no travel at all. I mean,
the biggest advantage for him is he's fully healthy and fully rested.
Yeah.
He's going to see the best.
100%. And his whole team should be also.
Yeah. I mean, again, you're talking about when you look at Milwaukee, who everyone feels like is going to come out of the East. I mean, you give me Anthony Davis as my second best player as opposed to Giannis and Middleton. I'll take Anthony Davis.
Every day.
All day, every day.
Every day.
Yeah, here's the other thing too. We got a tweet from Hinkie Haynes, you know, spending the first segment, you know, talking about what's going on with Corona and everything else, and then, you know, being excited or impatient for professional sports. The idea of bringing professional sports back has nothing to do with what we talked about in the first 10 minutes of the show. I mean, this is how professional sports would come back is different than how we just as regular people will have to deal with the pandemic. Like, you're talking about, you know, multi-billion-dollar entities. They're going to have every precaution. They'll have everything at the tips of their fingers as far as, you know, testing, all those different things to ensure this. Like, we're not saying rush sports back if it's not safe. We want sports back as soon as possible when it's safe. That's the point. It's not just all of a sudden grab all these guys and have them risk all of a sudden, you know, putting themselves in harm's way or spreading it more. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be a controlled environment where, because it's the NBA, it's the NHL, it's Major League Baseball, and they have the resources, like they're going to have things in place, safe, you know, safety measures in place that everyone that's participating is out of harm's way.
And we're not idiots. I mean, if it means that sports can't come back until September, or if it means that the NFL can't start until December, then that's what it means. I mean, we're not willing to put people's lives at risk here and, we need the NBA Finals, get out there and let's play, and if people die, people die. No, we get that. We're saying as soon as you've got to that moment where it is safe to start doing things again, we're excited and would like to see sports push to the forefront.
Yeah, it's all about it's all about mitigating risk and, you know, managing the chance that you could transmit the virus and perpetuate a problem that's already become, you know, overburdensome for the healthcare industry. So I just think that's the one thing that all of these commissioners have to keep in mind when they start devising plans as to how to get things back on track in terms of their sports being able to go about business as usual. The one thing I will say is, and I think it's an encouraging sign, is that you do have people in the federal government that they are leaning on as a resource in terms of being able to get their information and trying to figure out the best way to go about this. I think leaning on the people whose job it is to limit the transmission of this virus and to manage this pandemic, I think that's the most important thing that they can do. You have to have the information in order to make the best decision and move forward. And I think that's what all of these commissioners are doing.
Yeah, I think part of the incentive too is, and this is, I'm not saying this is right, but I think it's based in fact, is that a lot of times, you know, we look to professional sports, professional athletes is, you know, they signal to everyone else that, you know what, it's okay. Cause I mean, there will be some hesitancy once we're through this. If there's no vaccine yet, like there will be a hesitancy for people to, you know, be gathering in big crowds or, you know, go out to, you know, a college football game and sit around 100,000 people. Like people will be hesitant to do that.
But yeah, I don't know that I'm going to go back to arenas right away.
No, Dave, tell me, honest to God, if you're not a person that is consistently watching the news, what event happened that all of a sudden signified to everybody that, wow, we better start taking this thing more seriously?
The Rudy Gobert.
Sports.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a $1 billion corp that one player test positive, they shut the entire league down.
Yeah. And that, I think, has to be the concern. We talk about, or this tweet comes in about, you guys just want to push it back. We want it back. We want it back desperately for multiple reasons, just to give us a normalcy, to give us something to talk about in our jobs, all these reasons. But I will tell you what, the worst thing that could possibly happen, Chris, is we streamline this, get it back, have a bubble in Arizona, baseball, all the teams, you know, lock it down, all that kind of stuff. And if something happens to the point where guys are testing positive and it has to be shut down again and it pushes all the sports back by weeks and possibly months, that is the worst case scenario of what could happen as far as sports returning.
No, that would be the worst case scenario if you start back with games being played and then you have this thing, you know, run through, you know, the ranks and you have this rash of infections and guys dealing with this and you have to shut it back down. I think that's the worst case scenario for any sports league, whether you're talking about basketball, hockey, baseball. That would be the worst case scenario. So I think that's why they're taking so much time in terms of trying to go through, you know, all of these different models and figure out what would be the best way to try to execute it if, in fact, we do come to the conclusion that we can get back to business as usual with games being played without putting the players at any unnecessary risk. I think that's the biggest thing. Now I will say this, Dave. I do think that once sports resumes, you are going to have some positive tests. I think the biggest thing is that they have a rapid testing system where they can get the results back and then they can know what players are infected and they can isolate those guys where it's not something that it runs rampant throughout the rest of the athletes in that respective sport. I think that's going to be huge in terms of being able to get these sports leagues back up and running, because if you don't have a rapid testing system, if you don't know who's infected and who's not, then I think you're going to be in a situation where you run the risk of a lot of the athletes in that sport getting infected with the virus.
Yeah, that's the last thing you would want to have happen. I mean, I think it's going to be the rapid test, and it's going to be how you treat the virus. So if one of the athletes does get it, you know, how how effectively can you treat it? And as long, and just making sure you don't have to quarantine the entire team. There are plenty of, listen, there are plenty of deadly things that go through locker rooms. I mean, look at Chris's wrist. Look at the, I mean, Chris, you get a Mercer. How many teams have had Mercer go through the locker room?
Yeah. Well.
Like on a regular basis. And that, mm-hmm. I mean, that's, Chris dealt with it. I mean, that's.
That's life threatening.
That's one of the scariest things you can go through.
Yeah.
I mean, Sidney Crosby gets mumps. Like, I mean, things go through locker rooms, but you need to find, I mean, as long as there's a way to contain it and treat whoever has it. So you're not, I mean, don't, listen, there's inherent risk when you play sports, especially football. I mean, hockey, you paralyze. I mean, there are a lot of things that can happen. I mean, you see the Islanders, three guys get cut with skates. Like, stuff can happen, and it can be life-threatening. But you don't want to be putting, you know, you don't want to be a league that jeopardizes the lives of its athletes because you're trying to rush this thing back for selfish purposes.
Yeah, you can't. I don't know they ever recover or
because athletes
long?
Will say, like, listen, Dave, there'll be plenty of athletes that if you ask them now, especially the ones that aren't making, you know, top-tier money, you know, hey, would you sign this waiver in case, you know, God forbid you did get COVID-19? Do you know how many athletes would sign that waiver?
Probably they wouldn't even read the waiver, Rick. They just sign it.
As long as it meant playing, as long as it meant making money, they would sign it.
Yeah, but sometimes if you're a league, like if you're a parent, you have to protect your kids from themselves. And I think that's what these leagues have to do right now. I'm not saying not push forward and want to do it, but you have to be unbelievably careful in your planning and keeping these guys safe.
Well, Dave, we talk about how we want to get back to our day-to-day lives. I mean, for athletes, their lives is playing the sport that they love. And so, I mean, just as much as we want to get back, they want to get back. They want to be out there in competition. They want to prove how great they are. They want that. I mean, you can sense that from LeBron James' comments yesterday when he did that press conference. So I just this is one of those things where you recognize, okay, everybody wants sports to come back. But we just have to find the best path forward to be able to do that, and then the timing of it has to be right, whereas it doesn't put any undue pressure on medical professionals, you know, battling this pandemic. I think that's the balancing act that they're trying to figure out right now. And it's going to take some time. We're not saying that this is going to happen next week or the week after. We recognize that we could be talking about months down the road. But I think that they're doing their due diligence. They're trying to be prudent and find a way, if there is a way, to try to get things back on track.
And if there is a way and a smart way that you can keep people safe, then I think we're all for pushing ahead and trudging forward and having sports as soon as possible.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I think we're at a point now where, and you know, I was pretty aggravated yesterday and then kind of took a step back and took a deep breath. But I just think, I mean, I keep saying this, like, it doesn't cost you anything to be optimistic. And I try not to be overly optimistic, but I just think, I mean, when you start hearing some of these plans and, you know, if it's the NBA in Vegas or it's Major League Baseball in Arizona or, you know, North Dakota for the NHL, whatever it ends up being, I mean, it's so much easier to just rip all these different plans apart. I mean, yeah, we get it. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. Let's find ways where it can happen. Like, tell me how we can make it work as opposed to, you know, there's just so much negativity. Like, oh, you can't do this. And you go, well, yeah, we get it. It's going to be tough. It's tough for everybody right now. But, I mean, I think it would be a nice distraction for people that are sitting home trying to figure out what they're going to do on a daily basis.
Oh, could you imagine if you had, like, 12 baseball games today? Oh, you'd lose your mind. I'd watch every one of them.
Yeah, but see, that's what aggravates me. That's what aggravated me yesterday. You start talking about, you know, play will decline and guys' stats. It's not about this season for all these sports is not about your individual accomplishments or how many points you score or how many goals you score or what your batting average is.
It's just about the
game. It's about the game. Get the game back. You're doing your part to hopefully help with what we're dealing with now. That needs to be the focus. Like, help do your part. And I heard Mike Matheny actually said that. Like, that's for him the main focus, is that they get the sport back so it gives people a little bit of reprieve during, I mean, you're up for how many hours a day trying to figure out what the hell you're going to do on a daily basis?
Yeah.
Especially when you got kids. Can you imagine, Dave, think about how lucky we are. I mean, you built an expansive estate.
Oh,
you got the two kids.
No,
but you got, I mean... Yeah, but you got the basement. Like, if it's raining out, you got the basement with the lacrosse net so they can go down. Could you imagine being in the epicenter of this in New York City with a couple kids living in a small apartment?
I could not. I mean, every night
but
at 6
that's what people
o'clock,
are dealing with.
I know. I God bless them. Every night at 6 o'clock, we go into the basement. Ben's got his full bench. He does push-ups and sit-ups, and Alex has a lacrosse goal, and he catches 100 righty and 50 lefty in a row, and he takes shots. I mean, I cannot imagine being in a one-bedroom apartment with a kid right now. You must be going out of your mind. I get it. Everyone, Rick, has hurdles, right? Everyone in some capacity right now has things that stink. Every single person. So it's part of the new normal, like we started the hour with. That's where we are.
But that's what pisses me off when I heard yesterday, I was listening to the K show and I heard what Tex said about baseball. That's what aggravates me. Like you have to have some perspective on what people are dealing with. And yeah, there may be a flawed plan to try to bring all the teams to Arizona. I mean, you're probably better off having, you know, half the teams in one spot, half the teams in another spot, just so you're just not as many people. But, I mean, the reality is there's a lot, the vast majority of people in the United States and just the world in general don't have it as good as professional athletes have it. And to have to stay in a hotel room for 3 months that's, you know, you're staying in a 5-star hotel for 3 months. I mean, that doesn't seem like too much to ask. To be completely honest.
No, it does not. Now, there are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN. We bring him in, one of our favorites, the talented and really up-to-date with everything going on in the world of the NFL, specifically the New York Football Giants, and that is Jordan Renan. Good morning, Jordan Renan.
Good morning. What's going on, guys?
We're getting by, my friend, one day at a time.
I know. You know, today is the first day of spring break in this neck of the woods. 11 straight days of no school around here now, not even homeschooling. So.
But why not?
It's going to be... Huh?
Why not?
Why not what? Have school?
Why not blow out spring break and just say you're still going to go to school? I don't understand the point of it. Kids are doing nothing anyway.
I agree with you. I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, what the heck are we going to do for 11 straight days of nothing?
Yeah, that doesn't make all that sense.
A lot of activities I got to come up with. Yeah. Right in time for the draft. Perfect. You know?
There you go. Kids' activities right in time for the draft. All right, Jordan, a lot of draft questions for you. The one that will make me explode, lose my mind. Is if the Giants at 4 overall take the kid out of Auburn, was it Derrick Brown, right? Walk me.
Yes.
There's no reason for me to be worried or concerned about that, right? That's not going to happen.
I would feel pretty strongly that that's not going to happen.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Look, we know Dave Gettleman likes the defensive line. You know, Joe Judge, too. They're you know, both of them, and they say, what are their beliefs? Of how to build a winning team, stop the run right at the top. You know, so defensive linemen fall right into that category. And Derrick Brown probably can rush the passer too. But, I mean, let's be honest. They have a $16 million investment in Leonard Williams. They have a first-round investment in Dexter Lawrence, right? They drafted B.J. Hill, who's a rotational player. They even just signed the defensive lineman, Austin Johnson, right? Not a big deal, but they guaranteed him almost $1 million. So, I mean... There's only so many spots. I think you could feel pretty good that they're not going to go in that direction. Because like they tell you, you know, best player available, that's not really fully true, right? If the best player in the draft is Jonathan Taylor, the running back from Wisconsin, are they really going to draft Jonathan Taylor?
Well, they could. They could.
what's with the pessimism today? They're not drafting Jonathan Taylor.
I'm just kidding.
I know, but they're not drafted. Derrick Brown, I think you feel pretty good that they would try and move out, look elsewhere, go with another position for a player that is of a position of need that is at least closely graded to him at that point. Because we're talking about the fourth pick. There's good players available.
Jordan, I want to ask you a personal question because that's how much I care about you. How will you personally be covered in this year's draft?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be sitting in my office, really, at home. I mean, that's how it's going to happen. There's just like everybody else, right? Just like Dave Gettleman sitting in his basement or wherever he's going to be sitting in his house. Just like Roger Goodell you know, broadcasting from his house. I mean, I'll be on the phone or texting really nonstop with people around the league and people within the Giants and, you know, back and forth, and we'll be home. And I'm sure if they want me to come on and talk about the Giants, I'll be sitting and having this camera set up and ready to go. I mean, that's how we're working these days. Now, I will say this. For the most part, it hasn't been that abnormal to date, because the reality is, for us, at least as reporters, like, you're working remotely this time of the year, like 90%. Like, everything's about making phone calls, talking to people, and just, you know, going over, getting as much information and background on all these guys and all the prospects as possible. So not much has changed to date. It will change during the draft in the fact that I assume, we don't know this yet, you know, you'll be sitting at home, and rather than go and be able to talk to Dave Gettleman and Joe Judge right there in person, you'll be talking to them on Zoom calls or whatever platform they decide to use.
Jordan, I want to start with more of a big picture question about the Giants' approach to this year's draft. I remember at the beginning of the offseason, we all had a laugh when Dave Gettleman talked about the computer folks and trying to incorporate more analytics with their evaluation of players and the overall direction of the program. Do you have any idea from a pragmatic standpoint how that's going to be implemented 2 weeks from now?
You know, I don't think, first of all, when he talked about those computer folks, that was sort of setting up a system, right? A new, it wasn't like, okay, we're instituting a whole new way of evaluating prospects. So I don't think there's going to be a major change at this point. Now, I think they have people inside the building, and they've had an analytics guy pretty much for the last few years, where maybe they're, especially with Joe Judge there, they're going to be paying a little bit more attention to it or giving it a little bit more credence. But there's no whole new system in place this year. They started last year, Gettleman, 2 years ago even. He started to kind of change the way they did their grading in regards to making it into tiers, which was different from a little different from how they did it in the past in regards to grades. So I don't think there's anything new this year that they're really implementing. So those three computer guys were people improving their back-end systems and stuff, as far as I know.
Jordan Renan with us here, 98.7 ESPN. You know, the two ways that they could potentially go, it sounds like, are the linebacker out of Clemson or an offensive lineman. And I'll hear a compelling point, and I'll be like, yes, the offensive line is the way you should go. And then I'll hear a compelling point on the other side of Simmons. But yes, that's the way, in fact, that they should go. I don't know what the right thing is. I'm inclined to think offensive line, but I'm not 100% sold with that. What's your take, and more importantly, what do you think the Giants are thinking as far as the disparity between these two?
Yeah, I think that's the debate that they're having, right? Because it's best defensive player, which we're assuming at that point is likely Isaiah Simmons, and against offensive tackle, which would ultimately, you know, give you something to protect your investment in Daniel Jones. And I think that's a debate that they're having, and you know, which is the better way to go. And my, you know, just from talking to people and listening to people talk, there's four offensive linemen, right? Everyone seems to around the league. I mean, I've talked to people who like Andrew Thomas best. I've talked to people who like Mekhi Becton best, you know, an absolute monster out of Louisville. You know, he's the guy that teams can dream of as, you know, their Walter Jones, you know, Hall of Fame kind of guy, because he's such a physical freak. My gut tells me from what I'm hearing is that the Giants, if he's not at the top, he's right there. Tristan Wirfs is the guy that they like, one of the guys, if not the guy that they like, right in that mix, right? So in order to get him, like, he'll be available at four, right? But there's probably a likelihood that he's available at seven, at six, maybe at eight or nine, who knows? So I'm thinking that, and this is sort of like an informed opinion guess, that the Giants are really open this time. And I know we say that Dave Gettleman has never traded back. I really get the feeling that they would like to move back a little bit, whether it's one spot, two spots, three spots, five spots, and then take their offensive lineman, which I think their preference would be worse. Don't know that for sure, but here's the flip side, right? You want to trade. It sounds great. It's easier said than done. There has to be a willing partner on the other end. There's always a lot of teams that want to trade down. There's not as many teams that always want to trade up. And from what I'm hearing is, you know, the Miami Dolphins were the team, you say, Tua, 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 right? And I've heard for like a year now they love Tua, they love Tua. There's some concern there from what I hear, right? The whole idea that you can, the injury and you can't bring him in, I mean, that's going to be a hard investment to make. And I think that's why you're hearing people now kind of move off Tua from the Dolphins. And they might be going over to Justin Herbert. So that trade down scenario, which we've all been talking about for so long, might not really exist.
Jordan and I joined us on the show. Jordan, you mentioned Tua. Is it more about the long-term durability of Tua, or is it about the actual hip injury that he suffered?
I think it's about more of the long-term durability because, you know, you can get the information and look at how he looks now on tape and that kind of stuff, but it's about projecting if he's going to be that in 2 or 3 years, right? If he can hold up and, you know, I spoke to John Middlecoff on this week's podcast. He's a former NFL scout. And he said he's been hearing from people, too, when he talks to them. They don't think Tua is a premium athlete, right? That wasn't his strength. He wasn't a super fast, athletic kind of guy. He's kind of a guy who stands in the pocket and throws the ball, moves a little bit. And the fact that he's not a guy who's going to escape those rushes, right? Look, think about it. Some of these injuries he's had are plays where he's been tracked down. So he's getting tracked down in college. What's going to happen in the pros? And so to project the durability moving forward and make that investment, I think has teams concerned. And the fact that you can't bring him in and have him checked by your own doctors so you can kind of look at it and then project it out long term, I think that's the concern right now more than anything.
So, Jordan, we're hearing all these reports from general managers and from clubs complaining about getting things set up to run the draft remotely, a lot of general managers from their homes.
Right.
I mean, do we have any idea on where the Giants are at? Have they voiced any concerns about security, about the integrity of their process, the communications, in terms of being able to actually run their draft?
No, we haven't heard anything on that. And remember, John Mara is involved in these committees, right? He was heavily involved in the decision to have the draft, to go through with having the draft. So you're not going to hear anybody from the Giants, especially, you know, they threatened, we don't want to hear people go out there and complain. So you're not going to hear that from anyone with the Giants. And look, this is from my perspective. I'm sitting here and my daughter is, you know, their school has set up a system where they're basically running school remotely, right? Every day. There's assignments, there's meetings, all this stuff. My buddy is actually the technology director at one of these schools. They got it together in like a week, you know, of making sure that our kids, right, and their teachers have everything where they can operate our schools remotely these days. I'm pretty sure these billion-dollar companies should be able to get their stuff. First of all, they should have been working on this for a month at least already at this point, right? So I'm sure these billion-dollar corporations can figure out a way to make this work and make their stuff secure. And you don't need the IT directors to go to everybody's house either and set them up. I mean, come on. Everyone who has kids and their kids are going to school, they've done it to a degree at home with people helping them set up the technology, giving them, I know people, you know, that don't have internet and don't have computers. They were set up with stuff. They were given equipment and told how to set it up and operate it remotely. These billion-dollar corporations, they could do the same. And I, to be honest with you, and I don't know, I doubt I'm alone in this. I don't want to hear them complain about how they're worried about drafting football players because the technology is too much for them to do from home.
Tough love from Jordan Renan here on 98.7 ESPN.
I mean, do you guys disagree with that? I mean, it seems silly to me. I mean, what are we worried about? They're drafting football players.
Yeah. No, I think that you're right in your assessment. Evan Engram.
Although let's be honest, you know, these Zoom meetings that everyone's having, you can have like little side chats on the side and set up, you know, little group text type deals. And could you can we imagine Dave Gettleman doing that right now? I mean, there is something about that makes me chuckle a little bit.
Yeah, Gettleman, you know, getting with the times is not exactly awe-inspiring for the Giants fan base. Evan Engram,
make it work. You know,
you got to make it work. I agree with you. We've heard rumblings of a trade and him not being the starting tight end this coming season. Is there any chance that you think that he's dealt in the next 2 weeks or on draft day for the Giants to acquire more picks? Or you think they're locked in with Engram as the tight end for this year?
I think when they look at that offense right now, who's the most dynamic pass catcher that's on this roster? Evan Engram.
Yeah,
right?
Probably Engram and maybe Barkley.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said pass catcher. So I wanted to say, obviously, Saquon's probably the most dynamic offensive player. But pass catcher, the most dynamic pass catcher on this roster is Evan Engram. He does not have an exorbitant price. He is coming off an injury. He is not fully healthy yet, right? His value is not going to be that high. So I don't think it makes sense for the Giants to do that. Like, they're not going to get a really high pick for a guy who teams, honestly, wouldn't you even want? I think it would be hard even if they wanted to, which I don't think is the plan. Even if you wanted to trade for Evan Engram right now, wouldn't it be important to check this guy out beforehand?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's still recovering from a foot injury. As recently as, like, I don't know, a month or 6 weeks ago, he was still wearing a boot at times. So that would be a tough thing to do. I don't see it happening. I'd be very surprised if it happened at this point.
Jordan Renan joins us in the show. Jordan, last one from me. Level of concern for Joe Judge and this coaching staff not having, you know, OTAs or the kind of offseason that they probably need headed into their first year?
Yeah. Look, they know that it's going to be tough. Everybody knows that. And I think when I talk to people now around the league, I think everyone's kind of under the impression that there is going to be no spring, pretty much, right? I mean, what is the earliest that teams can possibly get back at this point? Are we talking June?
Yeah,
right? We're already
at the absolute earliest,
mid-April.
Yes.
I mean, like, realistically, you're not – anything before June seems unrealistic. So I think they're just trying to make the best of it. I know that Joe Judge right now is going through contingency upon contingency of everything. How are they going to operate if they only get the summer? How are they going to operate if they only get, you know, two preseason games? He's going through all this right now and just trying to make the best of it. And you're going to see them think of outside-the-box things. I know Nick Saban did something like he had his players all given Apple Watches, right? And they're able to basically track how much their workouts and stuff through the Apple Watches. Joe Judge is going to try and do things like that as well. Be as progressive as possible. Now, I don't know, given the NFL and the NFLPA and the rules, if that is something that can actually happen in the NFL. But those are the kind of things that he's going to try and do to make the best of the situation. And let's be honest, I was thinking about this recently. These rookies are going to be at a huge disadvantage this year.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I think most rookies are basically going to have to get redshirted if there's even a season, right? Mm-hmm. Except for maybe like the first, second-round picks. The other guys, I mean, you have a third-round pick. Let's say Shane Ximenez last year. He's coming from Old Dominion, right? Or Corey Ballantyne. They're coming from this level. They don't have any spring at all. They don't get to learn the playbook except maybe remotely. They don't get to actually practice it on the field with their teammates until the middle of the summer. There's no way coaches are going to trust these guys to play as rookies. They're just going to sit the bench, be basically redshirted and special team players throughout their rookie year.
So, Jordan, with everything that you're outlining from the first-year head coach not having an offseason and having a learning curve because he's never done the job before to young players coming in and being behind because they don't have the opportunity to have OTAs or minicamp, it just feels like the Giants are going to be in a tough spot. Now, I know there's not going to be a win-now mandate on the first-year head coach, but I can't help but think back to when John Mara said that Dave Gettleman needed to improve his batting average. This offseason, it seems like it's going to be awfully tough for Dave Gettleman to be able to have the kind of success that he would need in 2020 to justify him having a job in 2021.
I agree with you, which is to why when I looked at it from a big picture perspective, it made sense to do it last year, right? Because they're still not close. They're going to bring in all these new systems. Now they're even set back even further because the coach won't get, you know, put the players on the field till who knows when. So, yeah. I think the way this is going to pan out, Chris, is Dave Gettleman's fate is ultimately going to rest on the guys that he drafted the previous two, not this year, the previous 2 years. And those guys better make the jump under the new coaching staff, right? We know they said the coaching staff, they could have won more games, they could have done better job like developing the players, right? That was some of the complaints. So, all right, we're going to see now. Are the guys who were drafted 2 years ago, the Will Hernandezes of the world, the B.J. Hills, who didn't make that jump in year two, who kind of stayed in the same spot? There was some promise after their rookie years, but the second season, it kind of just, you know, hit the brakes and stopped. Those guys are going to have to make the jump. Those guys from last year's draft class, the Darius Slaytons of the world, he's going to have to do it again. He's going to have to keep going, trending in that direction. Some of those cornerbacks, those defensive backs, somebody's got to step up, right? I think ultimately that is what's going to decide Dave Gettleman's fate, and those guys kind of need to step it up in order for this team to be any good at all and really compete, even just for, you know, 8-8.
Yeah, well, it could be an interesting season for the New York Giants. All right, Jordan, we always appreciate it. Enjoy spring break, and we will probably talk to you in the next couple days. Good stuff as always, bud.
You got it, guys. Keep in touch. Stay healthy.
All right, thanks. That, of course, is Jordan Renan. 2 weeks from tonight, the NFL Draft. You can catch it right here on 98.7 ESPN.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, fellas, here we go. Before we get to the... to some of the very nice stories. I have one. Dave has one. I want to send out some birthday wishes to my friend Vicky. Canty's met Vicky before. One of the greatest. I actually met her when I played for the Islanders. She's a huge Islanders fan. Maybe one of my favorite fans. I mean, so thoughtful. Always checks in on the kids. She's out of North Carolina now because of work. But if you check my Twitter, too, she actually got a tattoo. And it's the infinity symbol with my number in it. So,
oh boy.
Want to wish her a very, very happy birthday.
Well, happy birthday, Vicky. Maybe some questionable decisions going on there, but a very happy, wonderful, lovely birthday to you.
How dare you? Here's my good story for the day, Dave. I want to send a shout out to Steph Curry and what he did. So, Shelby Delaney, who is an ICU nurse at Summit Medical Center in Oakland, California, she's been wearing Steph's jersey under her scrubs to summon her inner warrior. So Steph heard about it, and then he decided that he was going to FaceTime her to show his appreciation, which I thought was awesome.
I have one. If it's okay, I jump in here.
I know, but it takes him no time.
No, it's
great. And
then
when you watch the video, how excited she is and what she's doing, I mean, awesome.
It's great. And that's what, you know, athletes can do right now. Because let's be fair. You have so much time on your hands. You're sitting at home. You're playing video games. I saw Donovan Mitchell tweeting out that he's been playing video games for 11 consecutive hours the other day. I mean, to be able to give back a little bit like that and to make all the difference in someone's life for spending, 90 seconds, 2 minutes, it's a nice thing, and it's the right thing to do now. All right, I have one. You ready for mine?
I'm really looking forward to yours.
I don't know if you've seen this or not. So Tyler Perry, you know, renowned actor and producer, director, he bought all the groceries. You know, they have seniors hours for a lot of these grocery stores in 44 stores around Atlanta. if you were a senior during that, you know, specified timing, you went up to the register and it was fully paid for by Tyler Perry. So he did that in Atlanta with 44 stores and then did similar with 30 separate stores in Louisiana at Winn-Dixie. So again, there's so many ways to give back, and when we hear these beautiful ways, be it Steph Curry or Tyler Perry, we'd like to highlight it and bring it to your attention. But that's the way we start out in observations nowadays, because it is a different world for us. So good job by Steph, and excellent job by Tyler Perry as well.
That's awesome. I ever tell you the story when I tried to buy a woman at the grocery store her groceries, and she looked like she was going to fight me?
Why?
Well, so I came.
I have a hard time believing that you said, please allow me to buy all your groceries for you. And
I'm dead serious.
To the point
I promise
that she wanted to fight you.
She thought it was disparaging. I don't know why she got upset about it. So I get up behind her and I'm sitting there. She's got a big, huge, full cart of groceries. And I only had a little basket of groceries. So she weighs me through. Like, I have a ton of stuff here. You can go in front of me. So I get my stuff. And as the lady's going to take my credit card, I said, no, just, I'll wait. You can put her stuff on with mine. So she starts doing it. And the lady looks at her like, what are you doing? And she said, well, it's, you know, this gentleman wants to pay for your groceries. No, I'm good. No.
Wow. So she was.
And then she was like visibly angry at me. Like, wow. Why would you even suggest that you should pay for my groceries?
So you tried to do a good deed, and she didn't want any part of it.
Zero part of it. Was offended.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to text you when I go grocery shopping from now on. If you want to get online right behind me, I'll let you cut right in front. If you want to take care of the groceries, I would not have the same reaction.
Yeah, I thought you'd be happy, but no, she was.
Well, most people would be.
I guess I picked the wrong.
Out of all the millions of people that would, you know, probably, you know, talk about you in their nightly prayers after doing that, you picked the wrong one.
You picked the wrong one, apparently.
Yeah, clearly.
So here we go. Did this happen in Florida? A 31-year-old man and a 23-year-old woman were arrested around 11:20 a.m., and they were charged with 11 separate burglaries. They were found in their car, which was a Hyundai Santa Fe that fit the description of a vehicle used in some of the robberies. Would you care to guess what the 31-year-old man told the cops when he was arrested?
I can't even begin to think what he said. I would have.
He told the investigators that he believed he would get away scot-free because law enforcement was preoccupied with COVID-19 challenges.
Oh.
So that he just had carte blanche. Like, he's not.
Okay, yeah.
We just keep robbing people.
But officer, I thought I could get away with everything.
There's no chance we'll get caught. Here's the plan.
I thought you'd be busy dealing with the infirmed officer.
We're just going to go on all these robberies, and they'll never catch us because they're so busy right now. We just do whatever we want.
Wow.
Faulty plan.
It wasn't me.
It didn't work out.
Wrong place at the wrong time. It was officer. Here's the thing. I didn't know you'd be paying attention, and I'm shocked that you caught me here.
Pretty much. That was it. Like, I can't. Wow, you guys are good. I didn't think you'd ever catch me.
So your question.
Did that happen in Florida?
Did that happen in Florida? I tell you, the more I hear him, the more I say no. I'm going to say that's not a Florida story.
Wow. Chris Candy.
I'm going against the grain. I'm going to say that did happen in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, Ray Santiago.
I don't believe that happened in Florida. I don't think they would dedicate any less police forces to the outbreak.
Santiago, I got to be honest with you. You didn't even send me the story. I mean, with what you've been, when fully rested, what you're capable of, outstanding. I mean, you're a whole new level. Dave and Santi are right. Chris Candy is wrong. That happened in, they were arrested in Bayshore, Long Island.
That's Long Island?
Long Island, baby.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Where the new Florida?
They were breaking into gas stations, automobile repair shops.
Did it say how many they broke into?
11.
11. 11.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, 11.
They really thought the police were not involved at all, huh?
Yeah, they just thought they just looked around like, oh, there's no one around here. We'll just go rob everybody.
Wow.
Some scratch tickets. Here's another one. Did this happen in Florida? Residents of wherever this story happens were surprised when they opened their mailbox last week to find that unknown, whoever it was, they don't know who it was, had left plastic Easter eggs in their mailboxes. what was in those plastic Easter eggs.
Uh-oh.
Pornographic pictures.
Why? I don't know why.
I have no idea. I don't know, just this is a prank, I guess. Like, this would be funny if you open up your mailbox and there's a plastic egg with a pornographic picture in it.
But is that funny?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think it's funny.
Unless that's kind of your thing. It wouldn't be funny. I would be really upset if Milo went down to get the
mail. Of course,
get the mail
be horrified.
On his power wheels and then popped up with...
Dad, look at this!
Look what the Easter Bunny left me! He'd be 16, like, he just 16 years old, but I can't wait till Easter.
Right. Well, I know I always felt a special kinship with this holiday.
Oh my goodness. Can you imagine that though? Like,
you want to be the mailman for Halloween?
No, like all of a sudden, like Cassie catches him when he's like a teenager, like under his bed. He's got like Playboys under his bed. Where'd you get these? The Easter Bunny.
Easter. Yeah, that's right.
The Playboys would be
wrapped in enormous Easter eggs. That's the way he would keep his porn.
Oh my goodness. Did that happen in Florida?
Chris, what are you thinking?
I'm going to say it happened in Florida.
Happened in Florida. Dave Rothenberg, Florida?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. I think you've given us six in a row that we're not Florida. At some point,
correct,
you're going to have to go back to Old Faithful. I'll say Florida.
Wow, Santiago, Florida.
We going law of averages here? Because if that's the case, then yeah, I'll go Florida as well.
Oh, my God, I can't even get one by you guys. That is correct. That is Flagler County, Florida.
Don't
ask me where Flagler County is. I have no idea. Real twist. They got a real sick, twisted Easter Bunny there, though. It's got real problems.
I can't wait, Lewis. Easter's coming soon.
Tell me if this tickles your fancy. So, Dave, you mentioned earlier in the show burgers. So, Stephon Diggs he hasn't even played a game in Buffalo yet, got traded there, has had a burger named after him at the burger joint called Stack Burger in Buffalo. Are you ready for this burger?
Yeah, what do you got?
So you're going to have a bacon blue patty, which is topped with crumble blue cheese, thick cut bacon, and a creamy blue cheese spread. On top of that, or included also, is the demon patty, which is demon spice burger with jalapenos, banana peppers, cheese, and garlic parmesan mayo. Mm. You're also going to get the Vinny patty with mozzarella cheese, pepperoni, and cherry pepper bruschetta. And then also, this is a four patty burger, you're going to get the rodeo patty with onion rings, cheese, and house Loganberry brown sugar barbecue sauce.
It sounds like too much for me. Yeah, I don't think I'd want that.
Yeah, you almost have to like decide which one you want to eat with the bread and then take the other ones out.
Give me any of those, single patty, even double it up with the same spices. But it just feels like it's too many. It's coming from too many directions there. I know I wouldn't want that.
Yeah, what about you, Chris? Too much?
Just a little bit too much.
Are you guys blue cheese guys? Do you like blue cheese on a burger?
Yes. Love blue cheese on a burger.
Greatly.
So Canty's definitely going the thick cut bacon with the blue cheese then. That's the one he's going with.
That does sound good. That does sound good.
Tasty.
All right. That's it for an observation, right?
No.
All right.
Final observation. This is my own personal observation. I'm at the grocery store yesterday, like I told you, correct?
You told us.
I go to the self checkout. And I got the glasses, these pink glasses on. They're all fogged up. The mask,
your
the whole thing.
Glasses on, right?
Okay. So, last time I went to this grocery store, you self check, and then they had paper bags. This time they had plastic bags. So the guy in front of me, I leave my cart because I'm social distancing. Just give him, you know, the room to do what he's got to do. So he puts the stuff down, and then it's all at the end of the conveyor belt. So I leave my cart. I'm like kind of walking around, you know, picking out a couple different things, trying to stay away from everybody. So he goes through all this, the entire shop, he's got a mask on, right? Starts bagging the groceries. The plastic bags are stuck together, okay? Has a mask on. Decides it's a good idea now after going through he pulls the mask down, no gloves,
Tell me he uses his teeth.
No. Pulls the mask down, licks his finger.
Oh, God.
To separate the bags.
Ah.
Packs the first bag. Licks the finger again. The entire time he's packing the stuff, he's licking his finger to separate the bags.
Oh.
Goes through the trouble of wearing a mask to all of a sudden
Why?
Now go the... Go, thank you. Why? To lick his finger.
Why not just start French kissing all the customers? Really? why stop there?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. I was shocked.
Bad guy.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.